This is a production of Cornell University.
In the office, Liz Thompson is a trained lawyer. She worked with the judicial administrator for 10 years as an associate JA, and then moved over to the ombudsman's office. So she's well familiar with the general disciplinary situation and what to do about that. Adam Kleinberger is an expert in mediation, a general and helpful fellow. His most distinctive academic credential is that he is a graduate of the Barnum Bailey Klein College. Now, that does not describe the title of the office, but it gives a certain perspective to that. So, how much do we really do? What we do is we talk with people and we provide counsel and advice. I've been around Cornell now for a little over 30 years, so I finally learned where most of the buildings are, and I know most of the administrators and so on, so I can be more helpful to people from time. Basically, the ombudsman is an independent office. That is, we do not report to any office of the administration. We report directly to the university assembly. And now, it is only fair to say that the president is my power, so I have to be nice to him. But fundamentally, we do not even report to the president, to the university community as a whole. We're neutral, that is, we don't take sides in arguments. We're informal, that is, we do not participate in formal processes, with one exception, which is very funny to get on. If you are a graduate student of agreements with the graduate with agreements under the graduate code of legislation, we get involved in terms of making sure that it's handled appropriately, which I don't think we should do, and so I'm trying hard to disentangle from that. And finally, we're confidential, which means that we don't reveal anybody that comes to see us. Nothing about their case is discussed. So I can't give you any gory details tonight about exciting cases I have heard, because that would not be appropriate. But confidential has, as always, two little aspects following it. One, if you propose to do harm to yourself or to others, we would feel obliged to do something about it. And secondly, if we are required by a court of law, we would have to testify. We do not have legal privilege. But since we never take notes, and since all we would get is an elderly retired professor with a rather funny memory, that probably isn't too much of a problem. So who comes to us? Well, we have about 300 visitors a year, roughly speaking. Predominantly staff, I would guess about half our visitors are staff. And in general, the problem that staff faces is difficulties with supervisors or difficulty supervising people. And we try to be helpful and provide suggestions as to what they might do. We have a certain number of faculty. That tends to be about promotion and tenure issues, but not solely. There are issues within departments that we hear about, and again, we try to be helpful. We see probably more graduate students than we do undergraduates. And graduate students, the majority of the cases, have to do with difficulties with the committee or major professor. And that is a difficult issue. We try to help people figure out how to approach difficulties they may be having with their committee or with their major professor. And then there are what I would call general problems. And for example, one of these that affect you folks, some of you may be on fellowships given thoughtfully by the National Science Foundation or the National Institutes of Health. And one gratefully receives the check that comes from these nice people until, unfortunately, at the end of the year, you receive a communication from the Internal Vetting Service, which says, oh, by the way, you owe taxes on all that money. And the older student who came to see me said, I think it would be nice if the university were to warn students who are on fellowships that they're likely to get a communication from the tax man, and they might want to pay a little bit of money to pay their income taxes rather than go to jail. So he can be in absentia, I suppose, in jail, is an awkward place to be. And so there was a case where the other function of the ombudsman's office, which is upward reporting, comes to bear. So the first thing I did was call the Burford. And the Burford said, well, no, that's not really our job. And the side which most wealthy students are paid by direct deposit, we know nothing about that, and so there's really nothing we can do. We talked to the graduate school. So I called the graduate school, and the graduate school said, oh, yes, well, that is a problem. And you know, that's not our problem, that's the Burford's problem, and you should talk to the Burford. And so we've been having a frank and forthright exchange of views, and I enlisted the help of the president and the provost, and I believe that the situation has now been straightened out. The Burford says that he now, any time he issues a check to a graduate student associated with a fellowship, will include a little note saying, well, where are these general lenders? Do not get tax advice. Well, that would be a terrible thing for the university to do, but you could at least warn you folks that there must be a problem working. And the graduate school says that it has given great publicity to this problem, and that you all have seen emails from the graduate school, which I'm sure you've had with great care and attention, will tell you about this difficult problem. So I may write it, but it really is an issue, and it is the kind of thing that the ombudsman does worry about when we learn that some policy is really not working terribly well. That's one of the things we try and pay some attention to. And for example, when I receive visitation over the course of a year from all members of one academic department, which will remain nameless, complaining about life in the department, I then go and have a quiet talk with the dean to suggest that maybe there's a problem. And the dean just says, oh, yeah, I know all about that. But anyway, you know, we do what we can. So that's fundamentally what the ombudsman is all about. It's a place that's available to you, people you know. Please feel free to share this information with other graduate students. But then I think in general, people have no idea of what it is we do. And yet I can tell you from nice emails I've gotten from people who are visiting with us that we have, on occasion, been helpful. Not every occasion, of course, but from time to time, we can do something useful. So, any questions?
Yeah. So when a student has a problem with me, you offer to me a similar school to guide you.
We offer many rules and strategies to deal with. We're busy talking about the whole problem of mediation. We sometimes will go to a committee meeting and just sit there quietly just to make sure that everybody behaves themselves. There's no inflammatory language or whatever. And having a problem with the situation. But hopefully,
anything else from anybody?
So thank you very much for all of you coming up to you.
Thanks so much. And the website, if you can remember how to spell it, is up there. Google will help you too.
Yeah. There's everything you want to know and more on that website. Including our annual report, which describes in gory detail much that I talked about.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, next we'll move on to Ulysses Smith, who is the Student Assembly's Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion, and they've been working on some very interesting stuff on this particular topic, and she's going to give us a presentation.
Some of you might know, might not know, a couple of years ago, there was the Office of Minority Education Affairs, ONEA for short. And that was dissolved, and now it's transformed into a new office over in CCC that is the Office of Academic Diversity. There's some provost appointed, which you know is a really great guy, and there are a few other people in there. In that building, other than the first room, they house a couple of federal programs, federal trio programs, and other things. They also do offer a lot of different services, particularly for white students, first generation students, that sort of thing. And so we started on the assembly that we have a connection forming very other offers across the state where they do not have a connection with this particular office. That kind of came to light, a bit of a reactionary thing. I'm sure you've heard quite a lot about a few of the terrible incidents that have happened over the past couple of years here, particularly pertaining to a lot of students of color and more respectful. So we decided that we'll probably best is one we created a some sort of link in this office so we could better understand a lot of the things that are happening and a lot of the different initiatives that are going on. Additionally, the university launched its own diversity plan, inclusion plan, I think we'll call it that. It's called Foreign Destination. It's actually publicized in the diversity.cornell.edu. Every year across the university was required to submit five different initiatives. One of them had to be a competition team. They were only that the students from different community lines, as they call it, were to come up with those, and they must follow through with those. I can find the support they're doing in March. And the new initiatives are due by May or June. So, basically, my job is to attend all these different meetings, figure out what exactly is going on, kind of provide a different update. And then probably the biggest one now is we also created a student assembly diversity affairs coalition. There's also a separate committee that was created right after that, the student assembly committee on inclusiveness and diversity initiatives. Two separate things that I'm going to talk about one of them today on this diversity. Okay, so this is one of the things we can help with. As I said, every year has to do five initiatives. So we decided it was probably best if we came up with our own five initiatives so we get better, become better representatives in the center, better representatives in the body of the undergraduate students that we were supposed to serve. So as a part of the common opportunity, one of the major criticisms that we have is that we do not attract a lot of students of color or other first generation students onto student assembly. And that can be for various reasons. Because maybe a lot of people in the minority community don't necessarily see how the assembly has impacted them or how the policies that we create are actually important to them. So we really decided we need to kind of focus on some particular targets. So we have three questions on the program, and we can coordinate through that from back to the university initiative. So that's something that the past couple of years we started going to during the summer, just to kind of give communication to those incoming first year students about what campus and over your campus does and how they can get involved in community and things like that. We also did still in the process of doing an analysis of our membership of all of our communities and the assembly in general for over the past few years. Just to see what types of the basic agreement that is provided to other students, trying to go over stuff, whether it's just the terms of college, business, things that we can readily identify, business fraternities, affiliations, things like that. Just so we can see who exactly we're attracted to these buildings, and based on that information, what areas of the university we need to go to
Thank you, Lucas. And I want to just quickly interject, I know we haven't had a big diversity discussion in the GPSA except for near the beginning of the semester with some of the incidences that happened. But we also, so there's the five resource individuals across the campus, and Sherry Natario in the graduate school is the assistant dean or associate dean. Jan, please help me.
So,
okay, thank you. and she works with a lot of diversity initiatives within the graduate school. So she's our resource, one of our resources for graduate students in particular. Another thing is Ulysses mentioned the diversity community meetings. They happen regularly, and between Nicole and I and Evan, thank you, we sometimes struggle to get to them just because of their timing. So if anyone is interested from the GPSA in attending the meetings regularly and participating in discussion about diversity on a, I think, a monthly basis, they are. Yeah. It's not early in the morning, but it's still in the morning. And if you're interested, please let us know. We would much rather have one of our members go than Nicole or I to all of these different committees. So let me know. And then lastly, the toward new destinations requirement, which I believe the essay did without being told to do so, just prompted. We've talked about doing the same thing in a smaller version as part of the GCI process. So we are working on the diversity international students piece of the GCI, and that will be coming up in a couple meetings. So we're going to consider doing something similar to what the essay has done, because it's a really great document, and I'll make sure to pass it along to you all.
There's a whole big deal around the community that I'm doing. We have a lot of focus in. And I'm just here to talk to you a lot about this, and we'll talk about it last week. But the thought or the notion when you think about diversity, immediately you think it's a block or a minority. And in all honesty, that's not the direction the university wants to go anymore. Now, that's not what that word means, actually. It's much more inclusive than that. So we're kind of pushing the conversation piece, and we're now looking for support, inclusion, and engagement. How do we actually do this? I think we're not. I found that this is a difficult topic. And it can be uncomfortable. But so we have to put some kind of measurable progress and we'll do really well.
Yeah. With that, does anyone have any questions? Evan? Yeah, you have Jenny. Yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
Along with the CEO Tony, there's been a lot of focus between Leanne and Linda and me about number one accomplishment. The Cornell overall, both undergraduate and graduate, attracting the young people of color, virtual relationships. So that's the accomplishment. The other thing is, once those students get here, I'll be providing them support for them. I'll be setting up students' stories and say, hey, we're the most diverse guy in the school. So actually really looking at better ways to actually attract and market this university to students of color as a student, so that's involved in technology, and then figuring out the different ways we can support them, providing professional development opportunities to both undergraduate and graduate students. So that's mentorship, that's my first part, seeing undergraduate and grad, the process of coursework with DRC is always there, and we've got a lot of time where we don't need to choose to get that much on office. Really cultural aspect of it. I think program knowledge is something that we're really focusing on, and we're really trying to figure out how to do it all this way, to kind of bridge those gaps. And we have to see this first program knowledge, which is right across the system, which is the first place where you find the engineering and the research there, and the research there, along with the physical physical cultural dialogue. And of course, we're taking the office to do that. But I'm more than happy to sit down with you guys to discuss those kinds of things.
Anyone else? Yeah, please.
I have a question. This is all my thoughts. I think one place where I've got to continue as well as the RCA, one second company for undergraduate workers, looking at increasing diversity or taking the conversation in that curriculum, maybe some curriculum diversity outreach training for third grade students. I think that's good training within my college, but very involved. So maybe something more like to help us talk about.
Right. That seems really good stuff. Because we have faculty who speak for my colleagues from the other
colleagues.
Woo! There you go. So looking at that, we're going to have a really good idea.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Thank yeah, please, again, please let me know if you want to join those diversity community meetings. We really do need someone. That'd be great. So now we're going to move into the GCI topic area discussions that we had promised. So we had talked at the previous GPSA meeting about essentially rolling out the GCI into topic areas as we go along. So we have 8 topic areas and rolling them out to this meeting, a couple more next meeting, a couple more next meeting, and then the March 25th meeting, we put it all together and have the body approve it. So that's the thought, and with that, we have our first 2 topics today, thanks to the hard work of the GCI committee. So first of all, before I let them start, I want to give you just a bit of background and explanation about how we're structuring the GCI document as it will be. I've essentially modeled it as I am helping the committee to write each section off of the Cornell Strategic Plan. The Cornell Strategic Plan is a, I think it's exciting, but I think most people find it a very boring document about a variety of campus issues, from faculty excellence to educational excellence, all that stuff. Anyway, so I'm taking that model, essentially, and applying it to the GCI so we can essentially create a strategic plan. So the way it breaks down, and there are copies of both of these topic area reports, if you want to grab before when we go into the breakout sessions, right behind Trevaney and Kyle there. So basically, you know, we have each topic area. So, for example, the topic area of housing. Under each topic area, we have just an introduction of why is housing as a topic important to graduate students, and what's the graduate and professional student experience with housing? I mean, you know, why should, you know, the administration care about the topic of housing for graduate students? And then the introduction is just kind of, you know, to assume the topic. And then we have a variety of objectives. So for the 2 topic areas you'll see today, there are, I think, 3 or 4 objectives for each one. And the objectives are very, you know, much kind of goal statements. You know, what do we want to see from the community on, you know, for example, housing? you know, what are the big goals? What would we like the university to do overall? And then within each objective, there's just a rationale, again, another explanation for why it's an important objective for the university, and then a set of action steps. And that's really where the meat of this document is in these action steps. So when you guys read through it today, and I'll give everyone a little time to read through the document, because I'm sure you all read them word for word this weekend, to really focus in on the action steps, because those are the ones that really that the administration is going to look at, and that as we go and meet with the administration after we put this all together, we'll really focus on those action steps. The rationale and introduction are important, but they're just explanatory. So really read through those action steps, and if you have suggestions, additions, whatever it might be sure to let us know. So anyway, for an example, family services. This is the introduction. It talks about what we did in the 2007 GCI, what's happened since, blah blah blah. And this is an example of an objective. This doesn't really say anything. It says a goal, but that's about it. You know, support graduate students who choose to pursue non-academic careers. That's something we identify as an important issue in the graduate and professional student community. The rationale, again, an explanation of why that is important, and then these are the different action steps. And you guys can look at that in the document as we move forward. But you know, these are the things we really want to focus on today. So that's a quick overview. Are there any questions about this format? Great, thanks. Thank you, Apple Computer. So I'm going to turn it over to Nicole to introduce family services, and then Evan will introduce career services.
I've worked a lot on the family services piece along with Kelsey Morris and Christine Yao, I've also had a lot of support from Linda Majani and Kenneth Newman at Hybrid Community Center. Just the introduction, especially as I thought about this more and the challenges that students with families face, it really boils down to me as an issue of access to the education here at Cornell. There's no doubt in my mind that the struggles and hardships that students with families face places a particular burden on them that makes it difficult to achieve their academic, personal, professional goals. And so that's kind of been my motivation while working on this. So just a brief summary of the sources. Chelsea and I had a meeting with Linda and Candace back in November, and just sort of sat down and said, you know, what are the needs? What are the things you guys are looking for? What are families struggling with? Who can we talk to? And that was a really great jumping off point. We then held a roundtable discussion at Hasbrook with several parents and partners in November. Which was also an incredibly helpful source of feedback. That actually then led to a meeting this January about student spouse support that was actually organized by one of the student spouses. Her name is Nicole. She has a lot of interest in sort of having more conversation with the university administration about support for student spouses, particularly mental health resources and sort of making sure that the university is including and providing resources to spouses. And then finally, I've had a fair amount of personal email correspondence with friends, people I know who've had babies and kids since they've been here, and just said, oftentimes what I'll do is I've sent to them earlier versions of these documents and said, you know, are we on the right track? Is this, you know, am I capturing your experience? You know, does this recommendation make sense? Yes or no? And that sort of helps shape the recommendations that are in the final draft document. So you can feel free to make suggestions and edits. And then there's just four main objectives. The first is to improve access to information. One of the biggest things I noticed was the state of the student parents website. I first started doing research, and the first thing I found was that the links on the website were broken. And so that, to me, was the first, at least at a very basic fundamental level, the least we could do is provide information to that student. So the second is to improve access to affordable childcare options. You'll see under the rationale for this, just kind of a cost just the cost that student parents face and trying to figure out how they're going to obtain child care. And I mean, if you feel like sometimes you struggle on the grad student sessions that you might have, or if you're taking out loans, just imagine if you then were also paying several thousand dollars a year, not only in health insurance for your kids, but then also child care. And it starts to look pretty much impossible to me. Number three, generally supporting creating a climate and culture on campus that's supportive of grad students and families. And there's a number of more general action steps sort of under this. One is just increasing awareness about things like the parental leave policies and asking departments to figure out how to empower students when they come to them and say, I'm going to have a kid, I also need a PA, which is how I get paid, how are we going to make this work? Also, I mean, just so you can, again, go through there, and there's a several different things. One of the great ideas that one of the student spouses, Nicole, has is actually a need-based final year dissertation fellowship that would allow students that are especially struggling to sort of hold it all together, get large, unbroken chunks of time to work on their dissertation in the final year. And then the last one is increased support and inclusion of student partners in classes. So again, this is a lot of the student spouses indicated that they felt essentially invisible to the university. If you imagine, especially international student spouses come from a place where they may have had their own careers, their own lives, and they come to Cornell following their partners. Many international student spouses are unable to find work in the U.S. And are expected to essentially provide child care all day. And that leads them to have a lot of experience, quite a bit of isolation, and financial struggles, and so a lot of this is about trying to alleviate some of that stress and pressure on them. And yeah, so we'll have a discussion.
Okay, thanks. Evan?
Well, I'm excited again for the course as well as our this section is a draft document. You should feel free to make any and all suggestions from comma placement right up to either four parallel objectives or four different ones. I would encourage you to offer constructive comments. You must have that out here, let me describe it to you rather than just stuff. Now, obviously, these kinds of plans change, plan your life out with infinite detail 10 years in advance. But I think that act of helping, which of thinking about those kinds of goals can be helpful. Maybe other people have different experiences, but I think my sense has often been that kind of thing can be discouraged. That the idea is you as a graduate student ought not to be thinking about the real world. You should be thinking about the life of the mind. And don't worry, Cornell students get you. You'll be fine. I would like to think maybe a little more to it than that. Objective number one comes out of something probably some of you have heard me say before. I said it from the Board of Trustees last year, is that we're not dealing with an economic downturn here. We're not dealing with an impending wave of retirement that just needs to come over the hill. We're dealing with a systemic issue for 40 years. It's not great data on it. But let's say for about 40 years, depends on the field, there have been more people graduating with PhDs in any number of fields than there have been academic jobs. So it doesn't make sense to keep saying, oh, well, just keep pulling out. There'll be a job for you eventually. We need to look at the system holistically. We need to say, look, well, there are two possible solutions to this. Graduate more people with PhDs, or recognize, as I try to do as an objective, the PhD is a valuable and important series of training, not just in neurobiology, but in any broad number of skills that are transferable across a number of different fields. And I would like to think the world would be a better place if PhDs, people holding PhDs, were more involved in it rather than simply involved in academia. I think that because our advisors, not the staff and persons, obviously, are there in the particular career that they enter. They're in graduate school and then they became professors. Typically, they're obviously exceptions to that. Tend to be less equipped to help you with what it's like to go work for a major pharmaceutical company, or what it's like to go work for a not-for-profit, or what it's like to work in government. So where do you turn to those kinds of resources? There are great initiatives underway. This is the lens for that kind of thing. Cornell Career Services is conceived, I think, was conceived originally as an undergraduate kind of resource that is starting to change. There can be further progress being made. Transferable professional skills is another basic way of setting up the kinds of things that I've outlined in number one. And data collection is never a bad thing, especially with regard to alumni. What are our students doing after they graduate? The only systematic data collection that's done on this right now, to my knowledge, is graduation management, which says when you fill in your forms, so what are you doing after you graduate? But then there's no follow-up after that, right? I think for most people, the answer is looking for a job. But then you get the job, and graduation manager doesn't know that. And then 3 years later, maybe you move to a different job, and graduation manager doesn't know that either. We have an enormous successful pool of graduate alumni from this university. The law school, the business school, make great resources, great use of that. I think we can do some of those other things. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Evan. So what we'll do is we'll have two sessions, but feel free to stay in your own session. We'll do family services on this side of the room and career services on this side of the room. And please grab the sheets there and take a few minutes if you haven't read the documents to look them over. And I also want to make sure that Ann and Jan are recognized. If you guys want to come down and participate and help too, that'd be great. And everyone in the audience area, regardless of whether you're a field rep or what, come down and participate too.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.